When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Mate, not much. The sun's out. It's a beautiful day in South Sydney, outwardly. Inwardly, not so much.
The sun is shining, but on the inside, it's raining. It's
cold and dreary.
Sleeting, if you will.
It's snowing in Mascot for the first time ever, actually. not like the picturesque kind of snow, just like that layer that's enough to make all the roads slippery and dangerous, but is not aesthetically pleasing.
Have you spent much time in places where there is snow?
No, I've seen snow like two or three times in my entire life.
Well, it's funny because people who don't have a lot of experience with snow always think of it as like, oh, it must be like a winter wonderland.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you see in the movies and all that. When really, most of the time, it's just cold as shit and absolutely horrible.
And you try not to fall over on the sidewalk.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, it isn't like nice, white, powdery stuff. Like a lot of the time, it's just like grey sludge falling from the skies.
Mm.
Not great. Not great.
As romantic.
It's why I'll never be Team Winter.
That's fair. Yep. My heart is filled with nothing but grey sludge at the moment. And before we get to my bad Friday, I'm going to start with your bad Friday as the previously undefeated Canberra Raiders were shocked by the lowly Warriors.
The 14th-placed Warriors.
18-10.
Can you believe Sean Johnson screamed, "That one's for you, Bertrand," down the barrel of the camera at full time?
Listen,
we didn't see it in Australia because they cut straight to the second game. But I'm reliably informed by our Kiwi fans that they made this one personal.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't wrong to target me individually. I respect him for that, man to man. Perfectly okay with it. Again, the Warriors, it looked with about 20 to go that this game was going to get away from them again. Canberra dug in, taken the lead against all odds. But then they just showed a bit of graft and a bit of class down the stretch, and Roger Tuivasa-Sheck probably having his finest little patch of play since he came back.
Yeah, graft and class are really the two words to use. The Warriors started really, really fast, and Canberra actually looked a little bit caught on their heels by sort of the overwhelming force that the Warriors were bringing in the middle. Like Adam Fanua Blake was terrific again, and their structures were really, really working. Like that first try that Fanua Blake scored, I know he ends up scoring it, but the amount of off-ball movement that they had for that try down that edge, like it's no wonder Strange and Hopper Whitey got totally caught out by it. You know what I mean? Like that sort of stuff would have caught out any defense in the league. It was so well constructed. And then the Warriors were not unfortunate to not be up by more, but they created some pretty clear chances and just sort of blew it. But then Canberra were able to sort of work their way back into the game. I think their red zone attack is still a little bit of an issue. They were able to get up the field well, but inside the attacking 20, they sort of relapsed into some old habits a little bit, which is to be expected. Like this is a team that's playing a new way with a new dominant playmaker. So of course there's going to be some teething problems occasionally. The Tomoko try was unreal, like just sending Montoya to the moon. Loved that. But the Warriors, in contrast to the Raiders, the Warriors play with such a great structure and such a belief in it as well. And we saw this in the loss to Melbourne, where they never panicked. They just kept doing their thing with the confidence that eventually it was going to help them get back into the game. And that sort of helped them pinch this one late when Canberra had done so well to take the lead after halftime. Like, I really think Canberra should have closed it out after that Nick Kotrick try. Like, they'd sort of turned the Warriors away for three or four sets before that and then sort of worked their way up the field and then taken the lead. And with the sort of physicality intensity that they've played with over those first 2 weeks, I really think that it should have been enough for them. But yeah, the Warriors just really made some really key plays when it counted. Did you see much of this game? Because I know you were going to the game.
Yeah, no, we saw saw the first 75 minutes or so. So we only because we were at the Trinity in Surrey Hills. Yeah, nice. So just walked out and got the tram up at about 7:20. So
well, the last 5 minutes took about 45 minutes because Canberra decided to just challenge everything.
We can only do it once. That means they must have won several challenges.
They won. I swear to God, they won more challenges in this game than they did all of last season.
Is it true? That's incredible.
It feels true. I'm telling you.
I'll back you. I'll back you in, mate.
But it was just a couple of small lapses from the Raiders. Like Nick Kotrick dropping that bomb uncontested. That was really poor. Emre Guler giving away making an error then giving away a penalty. That was really poor as well. And then Hudson Young, who, you know, obviously one of the best players on the team. I thought he worked really hard, but he just didn't sort of have his best game. And he's had that one-on-one miss with Tuivasa Sheck. And against a team who are as potent as the Warriors, that can kind of be all it took. So, like, I'm not rending my garments and screaming to the heavens about the loss. But I do think Canberra should have had it. And it's maybe a little bit disappointing that they didn't.
Yeah, yeah. Guy I was really impressed with once again for probably the third week in a row was Tane Tuipeke. So what do you think the future looks like for him when Chance comes back? Because
Chance will come straight back in, I'd imagine. Yep. And I don't know if there's a spot for Tuipeke in this team if it's not at fullback. That's kind of the problem, because I think whoever they have on the bench is their utility. They want them to be able to cover dummy half a little bit. And I don't know if Tuipeke's really done that before. But he was really, really impressive. I was actually really impressed that the Warriors were able to close this out, because Tuipeke went off with the HIA. I know Tuivasa-Sheck's a really experienced fullback, but still, like, you've lost your fullback, which means there's a reshuffle. They didn't have Wade Egan either. So they were without two key members of their spine, and they were still really able to make the plays that counted. What did you think of the two tries to the Raiders that were disallowed, the Ethan Strange one and the Joseph Tapanay one?
Which one was – there was one that I definitely thought was a try, but now I can't – which – what was it described to me again?
There was the Strange one in the first half where he sort of pushed through a few defenders.
Oh, no, I thought he grounded it. Yeah, with the where they said it rolled up his arm, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
I kind of thought he scored.
I thought he did. According to the rules as they are now written, I thought he did too. Like, I don't have a problem with that not being a try, because I think he does lose control of the ball and he only kept it because the ground was there. So yeah. I don't mind that not being a try, but according to the rules that they brought in last year, I think it should have been a try. I was quite surprised when they disallowed that one. I wasn't as sure about that one.
That one was with that one because of where the ref is and with the cameras, like, it's kind of hard to see. I was kind of happy to just go with him with that one. But that again, if they called that a try live, they probably wouldn't have overturned it, right?
I think both of them were like that. If they sent it up as a try, I think they both get allowed. Yeah, but the Tapanay one, you know, guys are reaching out and touching the ball in close proximity to each other. I understood why that one got turned down.
Yeah, I do hate when tries. I understand the rules, but I'm not going full boomer and saying, oh, they look for reasons not to give tries. But I do hate when there's like a microscopic bobble in a contest. When a guy's clearly and cleanly, fairly won the ball, as Tapanay did in that little exchange with Tuivasa-Sheck, and just like, oh, I might have grazed a fingernail here, so it's not a try. I don't like it, but I understand it's the rules.
Do you think the word bobble gets used in any other context other than rugby league matches?
Only when baseball teams have bobblehead nights. When they give them
Well, that's a technical term, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, no, it's a word that I would only use in the rugby league context most of the time, I'd say.
Like how kickoff is, like how ensuing is only ever used before the word kickoff.
That's true. Should we start working bobble into our everyday repertoire?
I don't know. I'm not that committed to the phrase.
Hey, careful. Don't bobble those beers. Carrying them back from the bar.
I see. Now that would just jinx me, and then I would absolutely bobble the beers.
All right, well, we're saving this for the next time. I'm going to be yelling at you to not bobble the beers.
I don't like that.
I believe in you to not bobble the beers.
I think the clear way forward for Canberra with this one is get Hopper Whitey back on the wing, get Seb Chris back in the centres, send Nick Kotrick down to reserve grade for a good while. If there's another injury in the back line, I would prefer Schiller to come in. And I think the forward pack is too good and too capable to carry Emre Guler in it. Like, he carries the ball pretty well, but He makes a lot of mistakes. He gives away a lot of penalties. He misses a lot of tackles. And when you've got like Trey Mooney and Corey Horsburgh and Arta Mariota all playing reserve grade, then this forward pack should be an absolute shark tank. And if you have one or two bad games in a row, that should be enough to have you drop out of it, you know.
Yeah,
but then Canberra didn't help. Canberra didn't help themselves with some of their bench rotations. Gula played more minutes than Josh Papali'i did.
Feels wrong.
Don't like that. Don't like that. And I know a lot of Raiders fans were really fired up about the Whitehead and Hosking thing. Like we said on the Friday show, Whitehead was always going to come back into this team. And if he is going to play, he should start because then he can play the opening 20 and then Hosking can come on and play the last 60, which is exactly what happened. And Whitehead was fine. I actually thought Hosking had a tougher night. Like, you know, he had that bad miss or that bad defensive read for the Metcalf try where he totally turns his hips in, even though there's no real reason to, which is fine. Like everyone makes blues, but yeah, the reaction to the Whitehead stuff was I actually thought quite disappointing because Whitehead's a player who's been really good for the Raiders for a really long time. And Hosking, as good as he's been over 2 weeks, has only been there 2 weeks.
A Dally M front runner.
How about the Dally M's not being 100% shit this week?
Yep, they're back.
Yeah.
Like you negged Cherry, them into being better.
Cherry and Turbo still got one vote each for like absolutely no reason, but still, you'll take the wins where you can get them.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. What's a win, by the way? It's my next question. I would take one if I knew how to get them or what they were, but I don't, so I can't.
God damn. God damn, dude. Like, what the hell happened?
When you are faced with the week from hell, like Souths were in terms of the media scrutiny, the former players popping up with pot shots, the analysis about the coach's tenure, the comments about star players at the club, the whole cocktail of negativity that was the coverage of the South Sydney Rabbitohs last week leading up to this game. You can respond to outside noise and adversity in two ways. The first way is that you can take it all in, use it as ammunition and fuel, and go out there and give a good account of yourselves. Go out there and prove all these idiots wrong and show them that everything they've said about the playing group being broken is incorrect and that the players are running the club is incorrect and all this stuff. You can go out there and prove them wrong. You don't have to win. But if you have if this was just like a 28-26 game and you give a good account of yourselves, that puts all of that to bed. Option two is whatever the fuck happened on Friday night. Because holy shit, way to prove every single media person, fans of other clubs with access to grind, people associated with Souths either now or in the past with access to grind, way to prove all of those people right with one of the most gutless, cowardly, ill-disciplined, impatient, dreadful performances of my life. I did feel like a kid again in this game, Nick, because I was at the City Football Stadium with my pop watching Souths lose by 50 to the Roosters. But other than that nice little pop of nostalgia, very little to like. I think it was summed up by the first 2 minutes of this game where off the kickoff, Lindsay Collins hits the ball up. They try to strip the ball, give away a penalty. And then the next set, kick goes up. Tane Milne has no interest at all in defusing it. Scrum. And then a scrum play that I honestly think you and I might have defended better out wide than Souths did. Results in a Dom Young.
Dom Young's pretty fast.
He is pretty fast, Nick, but they didn't get within 10 meters of him. As bad as those early 2000s years were, and as lean as like it was a little bit in 2016 and 17 when the team had clearly quit on Madge, this is probably as bad as it gets for several reasons. The chief one is that the majority of the squad played in a grand final in 2021. These aren't bums, right? And then the other aspect that's so painful is that South set up this succession plan years ago with Jason Demetriou. And you've spoken and written very well about how Demetriou has won wherever he's gone. Every time I hear him speak in the media, he's very impressive. When I've had limited dealings with him, he seems like a very nice guy. I want him to do well. I want the club to do well. And they'd set this big plan up after Wayne leaves that this was going to be the new guy. And for all, like, it just seemed like a no-brainer, right? Like, this is basically what we said when he came in. It just seemed like a no-brainer that this was the perfect guy to take over from what Wayne Bennett had built at Souths and keep it going. And they put all their eggs in this basket because there was no need to think that it wasn't going to work. But now we're at the point where they're now at the point, Nick, where I'm getting random messages from people sending me rumors about stuff that's happened at South training. When you get to that territory where people
tough.
Are,
that's a tough place.
It's really hard. Yeah. Like I got sent a message saying that Cam Murray and Latrell had a punch on at training last week. Like when you get to that territory where people can just start sending you nonsense like that, it's really tough to come back from that. And I don't know what else to say, because when you're this flat and this listless against your arch rivals after a week where everyone's been writing you off and saying you're finished, what else is there to say? I just feel helpless watching this team. And I understand that fans of other clubs had it much worse than me. I'm not complaining. I'm not looking for sympathy or anything like that. I just feel hollow thinking about this football club right now.
But it's not a competition between who's got it worse or anything like that. But it is very different to support. Like everyone in our lives in football, we've all had periods where our team was bad, right? Where the players weren't good, the coach wasn't good, things weren't working, and the bad team lost because they're bad. But there is something to be said when you do have a lot of good players, and Souths do have a lot of good players still, but then this sort of thing gets dished up. And you know what would kill me if I was a Souths person, right? So they got blown off the field in the first half, right? And that's really, really disappointing. But you contrast it to what happened with Brisbane the night before. So Brisbane, very undermanned, also got blown off the field. And even if Penrith went off the boil a little bit, Brisbane stuck in the game and fought hard and got a couple of late tries for their trouble, right? So that shows a team that even though they were down, they weren't out. So it was 24-6 when Latrell Mitchell got sin-binned. The Roosters had lost their halfback. And then they put on four more tries just like as easy as breathing. Like some of them were dead set training run stuff, you know, and Souths just really, really capitulated. And like, I'm a big fan of Jason Demetriou as a footballing mind, but the way this team is playing, like it's hard to come away from any other conclusion that like, maybe they're just not putting in for him anymore, you know, like, and I don't think they're putting in for each other either, you know, like the work off the ball, the effort in defense, the communication in defense, just none of it's there. Mm. None of it's there. And you're kind of right, mate. You can't sort of summon a little bit of fuck you energy after the week that they'd had playing against their arch rivals in the games that they tell us are always so, so important. If you can't summon a little bit of fire then goddamn, when can you summon it?
Yeah, I don't know. And I think that's it's often the case, right? It's just like the playing group just seems to have packed it in. And it doesn't, honestly, apart from Cam Murray, could any South player be remotely proud of their performance on Friday night? I don't think so.
Not really. Not really. And like Murray is just, he's trying so, so hard in defense, especially. But I think he seems to be the only one who is really like leaving it all out there. And I don't know if you could see on the broadcast at home, but you and me are at the game. When Souths had the ball, Murray was in back play half the time, like dying because he's working so hard in defense, you know? And a lot of other guys on the team, they have energy to do things in attack, but defensively, they're just not as into it, you know? So there's a chance this can get even worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you want to see him do to try and make it get better? Are there any more moves you want to see him make?
They could sign Tane Tuipiki immediately and he can play fullback and Latrell can go play centres.
Do you want Latrell in the centres? Like, do you think that's the thing that you're
doing? I'm at the point where I want that now. But the flip side of that is who plays fullback? Jai Gray. Even smaller than Blake Taft. Fantastic. What a great idea.
Oh, God.
It's awful, mate. It's just horrendous. There's no excuse for them to be this poor.
Yeah.
It really isn't. There's like, I understand that Tom's got a lot of miles on the tank. He's played, 250 games or something. And like, this already is acknowledged as his last year at Souths. So I can understand why he's dropped off a little bit. There's no excuse for guys like Tevita Totola, who's flirted with Origin selection in the past, and Keon Kalamatangi, who's played Origin, to be this bad. There's no excuse for that. And it seems like Alex Johnson's lost three steps overnight since the offseason, which is just brutal. Yeah. And
that's tough.
Because, you know, while Souths have always had this carousel of unreliable, bad right wingers, he's always been there on the left. And I don't care what anyone says about Alex Johnson. I'll defend him till the day I die. He has always been a solid player defensively, kick defense, support play. Everything apart from yardage runs, he's always been above average at. And even he now is not reliable at the moment. And like, you just look around the field and these guys that you're supposed to trust, these elite players that you're supposed to be able to trust to pull you out of this. I don't think the Damien Cook thing really did anything. It didn't seem particularly like he lit a spark when he came on. He played okay, but
I'm worried about Cookie.
Me too.
I'm just worried that years of 80-minute performance, because he's been an 80-minute hooker ever since he got the start at South, which is about 6 years ago now, and he barely missed any footy. I'm worried that the years of playing 80 minutes in the middle of the field have now outstripped whatever longevity he was going to get from being a late starter in first grade.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think the same. And, you know, again, Cody, slow starter, but he was trying things on Friday, but they weren't working. He threw a couple of passes into the stands and stuff, and just the kicky game's not there. Footy Dean, I mean, what could you say? I mean, I don't think it made any difference. I will defend the decision to drop Ilias. I don't think he was playing good enough to keep his spot, and they had to do something. But, I mean, there's not much you can do when you just – the team's just getting the shit kicked out of them like that, right? Like, it's just really hard to get anything going. So, obviously, I'd want to see them stick with Hawkins for another couple of weeks. Apparently, Ilias was great in reserve grade, though, so we can.
He was pretty good. I'd stop short of great, but he was pretty good.
I didn't see it. I'll take your word.
He had the sort of game that you would hope that he would have, where he looked really confident.
Okay,
which was nice to see. He wasn't dragging his feet with his head down or anything. You know,
did a humor before we move on. I did just tweet on Friday night, like, I can't, like, basically just what I said. Like, I'm really low on this club. I can't remember. And someone replied. I'm not going to name them, but to be fair. Two tries are fluky plays. Two tries from behind the line kicks. A simple try for scrum play. Fast winger given too much space. A try straight from the sin bin. Doesn't make it good, but four tries that basically bounce the Roosters' way. Sometimes you can't defend luck. They're just unlucky, Nick.
It was 48-6, dog.
Yep. If you take away all the tries they scored, though, it was close.
Come on.
It's just going to make when we win 49-6 to win the Ron Coote Cup later in the year all the more
sweet. I forget that it's cumulative.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, our chat about this game is about to get infinitely worse because the Roosters were fantastic.
They were.
Tedesco continued his excellent bounce-back season. He made an interesting point in the presser after the game. He said that Justin Holbrook's come in as an assistant, sort of flipped the script on the attack a little bit, and they want to use Tedesco a little bit wider rather than having him hit it up the guts all the time, which I think is a really good move. I think it opens up the attack and – He's such a great runner of the football, and we saw that in this game. But his passing was just superb. Like that ball to over the top to Dom Young.
Yeah, it was great.
He kicked it inside for Sam Walker. That was just gorgeous stuff. And Young was how's this for a stat line for Young? A try, 174 meters, 14 tackle busts, 4 line breaks, 2 try assists.
I hate that they got him.
That is absolutely ridiculous. And
We said it at the time, but how the NRL didn't step in and block
how did
that.
How did the government not step in?
Someone, Albo, get like, on the blower. Like, reckon, you're a South Sydney man. How did you allow this to happen?
Taylan May gets put on report for duty of care. Where's the duty of care here? Why are we being forced to put up with this?
Yeah.
Young.
Ridiculous.
Like, I think it's probably taking the Roosters a little bit of time to figure out how to use Young because There's speed and there's speed and then there's Dom Young speed, you know, like there is no one in the NRL that can move like him, and you could see that on one of those passes that Teddy threw to him. Teddy sort of went over the top with it, and it actually it was probably a yard or two in front of where Young was supposed to be, but because he's so quick, it was two steps and he was able to accelerate onto the ball. Like they were able to throw in the ball where he's meant to be rather than where he is. And cause he's so fast, he makes it work. You know, he was incredible. And like, they really went after that White and Johnson edge. I think they thought, well, we've got Dom Young on Johnson. That's a big athletic advantage for us. And Whiten's playing his first game with Johnson. And a lot of the time Whiten, while he hits really well in defense, a lot of the time his reads at center aren't all they could be because it's a tough position to defend in. And he hasn't played there for 10 years, not really, apart from a game or two there at rep level. So they really, really went after those two, really exploited that matchup. Thought Sam Walker was really strong when he was out there. Maybe not doing a lot of typical halfback stuff, but he is something of a more unorthodox player. You know, so as long as he's doing that sort of stuff, I feel like he's playing to his strength. Sandon Smith, holy hell.
Yeah.
Where has all that come from? I thought
extremely
he was
super annoying.
Yeah, I thought he was super.
How is this fair? We can't find one good half at the moment. They're just like rolling out this guy that they Like, oh, fine, I guess this guy could play this week, and he plays really well.
Oh, dude, that crossfield volley.
They scored two very Raiders tries in this game, but all you can do is laugh.
Well, that was the thing. Maybe the Raiders couldn't score any of their tries because all the bullshit energy was being used up at the footy stadium. Is that selfish? So. Is that selfish from the Roosters? Hard to say.
I'd say yes. Once again,
I thought Radley was really strong again. He seems to really have turned a corner with his football. Really liked what Brandon Smith was doing in the middle of the field as well. And really, really stoked to see Connor Watson come on and do well. He's one of the NRL's real, real good guys. That knee injury last year was really tough for him. I think there were times where he was kind of considering retirement. But he did really, really well. I don't know how he fits into this team once Keary comes back, because I know they like Sandon Smith for that utility spot. But always going to be happy to see Watson do well. Very, very impressive stuff from the Roosters. Very impressive stuff.
Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do. I really don't. And I don't know how Souths are $1.40 favourites this Friday, but coming off a 42-point loss against a team who won by 32, the Bulldogs.
Yes.
You'd have to be a real dumb. You'd have to be a real idiot to have Coltrane the Gold Coast Titans, wouldn't you? The dumbest man in the world. You'd have to be a moron. Who'd you Coltrane last week, by the way?
Didn't you tip Souths?
Yeah, but I tip the Souths every week. I Coltrane the Cowboys, mate. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, wow. This one backfired on me.
Is it fair to say? First of all, we'll talk about the Bulldogs in a second. They played fantastic. I don't want to dismiss the Bulldogs' performance. Yeah, the Titans are bad.
You know what? I liked what I saw.
Yeah, I also liked what I saw. But the rugby league might have passed Des Hasler by.
Whoa, yeah, this wasn't easy. The editor at large dug out a great stat the other day. The Titans have the fewest points through three rounds of any team in history.
Going back to 1908. Who was the previous worst?
I'm not sure, but like, I know they have the bye in there, but like, here's an example for you. In 1920, there was a team from Sydney University in the big leagues, right? And they had the bye in round one of their first season, which, first of all, amazing. And then in the second round, they lost 36-12. In the third round, they lost 44-8. So that's 20 points. That's 16 points more than the Gold Coast Titans have managed through three games in the year of our Lord 2024.
And how many games did Sydney University win that year?
Two.
Fantastic.
No, wait, hang on. One.
Oh, well, I think
one was in a knockout cup against South Coast.
Oh, cop that, Edwin.
And one was against Annandale.
Oh, cop that. You kind of used to live there.
Annandale were winless that year.
Ah.
And through three rounds of that season, they'd scored 5 points. They lost 43-0, 22-0, and 25-5.
So they still had more points than the 2024 Gold Coast Titans.
Okay, yeah, but this Annandale team might be the worst of it, eh? Then in round five, they lost 28-0. So as long as the Titans score 1 point this week, they won't be the worst ever through four
rounds. If they scored five, though, Nick, that means it was a try and a goal, right? So six in modern standards.
Adjusted for inflation.
You've got to adjust, mate.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this was just an absolute disaster, wasn't it? Like, it kind of got summed up by that bomb try to Kieran Foran right at the start, where Brimson could have just scored easily but just kind of second-guessed himself. And then from there, it just got worse and worse and worse. Like, Tana Boyd just had an absolute shocker at halfback. Fillmore missed 1,000 tackles. Like, what were you going to say? Were you about to keep
I actually wasn't.
Lie that I
no, no, no,
I
no, I wasn't.
Tana Boyd?
You do rate both for more, though, so. But
that's another one that's taken
back. I actually wasn't. What I was going to say was, and I think Simon said this to me on Saturday, but I've never seen a player as visibly terrified of another player as Tanner Boyd was of Viliami Kikau in this game.
Oh, your Kikau was tremendous. Like,
he would have gone to sleep that night just dreaming about that big blonde mop just steamrolling towards him again. Because he just absolutely terrorized him.
But I feel like because Kiko was injured so much last year, I almost kind of forgot about him a little bit. And I forgot what he
can do. Why? Because he played for the Bulldogs.
Well, that too. But like I almost forgot what he can do when he really sort of relies on his size and his athleticism. Like, I think some of the best footy he ever played at Penrith was in the lead up to that 2021 title. He was coming off the bench and he probably wasn't happy about it because, you know, he's been a starter his whole career. But he sort of put away the fancy passes and all that, and he just really focused on throwing himself around in attack and defense, really using his size and his power more than his skill. Mm. And this performance kind of reminded me of a little bit of that, because you're right. He just went after Tana Boyd, like just totally attacked him with the ball and without. Like, and it was a sight to see, like a real sight to see. I thought he was exceptional.
I just realized our right-sided half is known for his bad defense, Dean Hawkins, and he'll be marking up on Viliami Kikau on Friday.
Do you think Viliami Kikau will watch the Footy Dean video about tackling?
I hope
in the lead up, just to get a couple of tips.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, maybe the trick shot one too. But
I think on paper, when you look at this, you would think that the Titans would have the advantage in the middle of the field with Fotawaka and Fasul Malawi, but
not anymore.
Well, that's very tough for everyone. But Canterbury just like ripped in more. They just wanted a lot more. I thought Josh Curran was terrific off the bench in the middle of the field. Maxi King was good up front too. And it probably wasn't sparkling footy from Canterbury or anything, but it was clear how much they wanted this and how much they were willing to fight for it. And that effort sort of showed through the longer the game went, you know. And like it was a lot. There was that same fight that they showed against Cronulla in round two, where we did like what we saw a little bit.
Yes.
You know, we kind of got a little bit of that again. So I was really happy for them because it's been a tough start to the season for them. And we have been making a lot of fun of them and sort of having a lot of jokes at their expense. But win's a win, mate. It's good stuff. And how good was the Wahash?
Mate, he was unbelievable. I haven't looked at the Dally M points for this weekend yet. You said they were better. How many did he get? I assume Kikau got six. Maybe Curran, I'll keep talking. I thought maybe Curran or Preston might have got a couple, but I thought that Karaz played well enough that he was probably worthy of at least a vote or two.
Remember when he was like third in the
leader after three rounds last year?
He only got one. Kikau got five, Marnie got five, Kiraz got one, and Curran got one.
Okay, all right, fair enough. None for Preston. Okay. I thought Preston was pretty
good. None for Presto. Preston Mania is back.
Mate, isn't it just? Yeah, look, I feel like the most wrong I've ever been about anything was like 2 years ago when I was like, we shouldn't have any suburban grounds anymore and the all games should be at Allianz or Parramatta. Because like obviously going to Leichhardt so much in the last couple of years has just changed my opinion on that. But also just watching this game and seeing the crowd and seeing the fucking railway workers standing behind the post, just clearly
loved
not doing anything.
Love
just
that, man.
Fantastic shit.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've actually done a complete 180 on that because I think maybe when we first started having those conversations was a time, it was during COVID as well, where like we weren't going to football games. And I'd just forgotten how fun it is to go to some of these places. And yeah, it just looked like the vibes were immaculate out there on Saturday. And yeah, as you said, it's been a rough few years for the Bulldogs fans. So delighted for them. And yeah, they played really well. They played really, really well.
Yeah, they did. It was some green shoots, as the parlance of the times seems to be. But let's get back to the Titans really quickly. You said that the game might have passed Des Hasler by. Even if it hasn't, I don't know if this is the sort of team that sort of suits the style of football that he wants to play in the year of our Lord 2024. Because like when the Titans have done well in the last couple of years, it's been because of freewheeling point scoring insanity. And that's not Des Hasler football. He likes his teams to be very controlled, very composed, very conservative even. You know, the big exception is that Manly year in 2021 when they sort of did have a bit more freewheeling attack to him, but that was the peak of the Vlando ball stuff. So that might be a bit of an outlier. But yeah, wow. I was actually quite stunned with how bad they looked.
It's pretty awful. And it's difficult to see how this turns around because, well, I mean, is it we don't have to do it. We'll just go right now. Tino out for the year with an ACL injury. Just awful, disastrous. Awful stuff, yeah. Great guy, great player, a leader of that club. And yeah, the best thing about this team was their middle. Like that was the platform that they could build everything else that they do off. And then losing the best guy, it not only makes them worse, it obviously will you know, makes it harder going for guys like Mofo, because there's going to be more scrutiny on him now from defenders and stuff, and less tiring out from Tino taking the carry before him and all that stuff. Like, it's just got this residual effect that's going to carry drop down through the entire club. It's disastrous. Their halves are so bad, so bad. And the
I know Boyd was obviously quite poor, but didn't Foran look old?
Mate, that's the thing as well. I think, again, like, just a 1 year too many for him, maybe. Which people have been saying about him for a while, but I think it might have actually caught up with him. The hooker rotation is dirt. Like, there's just I don't really, like, for a team with so many exciting guys in the outside backs, and they'll get Jaden Campbell back, I think, next week, week after, somewhere around there. And they'll get Dave Fifita back soon as well. And those guys will help, of course. That's probably their best player and their most exciting player. But when you're playing with no imagination at all, when it just seems all very rudimentary, I don't even know if that's going to help all that much.
Mm.
Like, is Dan going to tell Dave Fifita to put the offload away? Like, fuck me, like, what are we doing?
That's the thing. Like, I don't know where they go from here. I don't know how they go about fixing this, you know? So it's not great. It's not great.
They play the Finns, though. At home, that's a winnable game.
Yeah, it is, but the Finns in Queensland, man, you know?
Well, it's a Fortress Robina, Cbus Super Stadium.
I was going to say first time game of the year, but they played there in round one and got thrashed.
Yeah, it didn't go great.
Not great, yeah. But at least I don't have to cold train them again for the rest of the year.
That's true. They'll probably have worse results. So, yeah.
I'm a dumbass.
Being 3-0 in the cold train cup isn't for everyone, Nick. It is for me, though, because the North Queensland Cowboys 46, the Dragons 24. I thought, as Kyle Flanagan went over to score, that I'm going to be in the dum-dum boat with Nick. But no.
I was watching this one at the Orange Grove Hotel before the Tigers game, and things were well and truly heating up. And the shouts of King Kyle were loud long when he slashed.
Were they from
through.
You?
I was part of them, but I didn't start it. Okay. I will say that. Yeah, this was a crazy one because like the Dragons looked so good for that opening 20, like running up the score, looking absolutely fantastic, and then they just totally dropped their bundle.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how this happens, where teams can look unbelievable for 20 minutes and then look like they've never played rugby league for the remaining hour. And we see these games all the time. Like, I mean, I just don't get how it happens, because the Dragons were flying around in that first 20 minutes. They were attacking the edges. They were doing everything right. They were kicking well. They were support. The support play was great. The Sloan try was really good. And then you think, yeah, they're on one here today. They might slow down a bit, but, you know, not. They'll be trailing at halftime. Like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, what the hell are we doing?
I still don't really know what to make of the Cowboys, because, yes, they're unbeaten, and, yes, they've put up big scores in two of those games, but I also think they've played three teams that were operating quite below their best. But I guess the promising sign is, even if the Cowboys aren't playing great, they just have so many weapons that if they play well for 10 minutes, they can totally tear the game away from the opposition. You know, and that's kind of how this one went. Like, and it was different dudes as well. In the first half, it was Robson, who was just absolutely sniping around the ruck, picking out runners all the time, and not with the starters or anything, with Griffin Neem and Sam McIntyre. Griffin Neem ran for 179 metres. Was the most of any forward on the field. You know, Robson had three tries. I think that's easily the most he's ever had in a game in his career. And then in the second half, it was more Drinkwater, and they were doing it more out wide. And, like, that try that Tom Dearden scored, where Drinkwater went inside to Holmes and he had Dearden, and just so many guys went going in different directions and hitting the ball at speed. And, you know, and the Cowboys maybe didn't look that impressive, but they put up 46 points without really looking like we're getting close to what they're capable of, which I guess is the scary thing. Like, imagine if they can really put a saddle on this thing. Imagine if they can iron out some of those kinks and just keep going with the great attacking football. You know, this could be a team with an incredibly high ceiling, because they're just so dangerous all over the field.
They're a fascinating team. They really are. I don't really know how you analyze them, but I thought for that last 60 minutes, they were fantastic. The attacking football that they can play is almost unrivaled when everything's clicking, just because they've got so many dynamic players in all the important positions. I thought Tom Chester came in, the most, like, mid-table Premier League looking winger, both in looks and name of all time. And still, I thought he came in and looked really good.
It's such a football manager name, isn't it?
It is. It really is. Like, Tom Chester's a left winger for Bournemouth. Like, anyway, thought he came in and looked really good. Thought that Val Holmes had a slow start, but really grew into the game as it went on. And yeah, Chad's best game in a while too. So really good signs for the Cowboys. Really, really good. To be, as you said, I think the Knights might be better than their record indicates, especially after how they played on Sunday night. But yeah, that's two kind of gimme games for the Cowboys in the first couple of rounds. So maybe you can't read too much into that. But, you know, still, I don't care how bad a team is. You got to turn up to score 43 and 46 in those two big wins. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And they never win in Sydney either. So that, I think that's the, like, yeah, another heartbeat as well.
Any OI win they get is going to be really good for their confidence. The Dragons, like the way they collapsed down the stretch is really disappointing. Like the Chad Townsend try, like, come on, man, you can't be conceding ones like that. Like they're a half, but he's not even really dummying. He just sort of hits it up off the ruck and pushes through three blokes to score. Like, come on, man, what's doing?
This is his house. I don't know what you want.
Why is Cogra his house?
I don't know. Are they all his house when you think about it?
See, the way you say I feel about Tana Boyd is how you feel about CT7.
Yeah, except Chad won a comp.
A long time favorite of yours.
A proven winner and premiership hero against a guy who went as close to wetting his pants on the field as I've ever seen a player come.
I'm not saying that he's...
You love Tana Boyd, and now you're projecting. Now you're deflecting onto me. And I won't have it. Not today. I've got enough shit going on with my club. I don't need you coming in here and spouting nonsense.
I'm not... Do you not love Chad Townsend?
I do love Chad Townsend.
There you go. That's all I was saying. And you keep propagating this lie that I love Tana Boyd, even though I've never expressed that opinion.
You just said the words and I'm going to clip them out of context.
Oh, you piece of shit. Is this being gaslit? Is this...
I actually am gaslighting you this time. Yes.
I can't believe you'd do that. So that collapse from Saints was really, really bad. It's like, I'm starting to think that first round was more about how poor the Titans are than anything Saints got going on.
The evidence is piling up.
It really is. It really is. But I do want to give a big shout out. He was. I do want to give a big shout out to Jesse Marschke as well.
Mm.
So played hooker, made 40-odd tackles. Had a big family contingent there. They were holding up a banner that said Froth Pig on it. And I want you to promise me something, Bungard. I know it's unlikely, but if I ever play first grade, I want you to come to the game with a sign that reflects my drinking habits.
Okay, I will do. Okay? Lager Lout.
Lager Lout. Yeah, so I only want good things for Jesse Marschke, Froth Pig himself.
He bashed that guy and he was right to do it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, shall we move on?
Let's.
We've been waiting because Fortress Leichhardt was bouncing once again. 98 points in their last two games there. A 32-6 win over the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks, who came into this game as red-hot favourites. You got Appy Korosau. He's here to set up tries and projectile vomit all over the field, and he's all out of vomit. You got Lockie Galvin, who's playing unbelievably well. You got Justin Ollam, who looks like he's gone back in a time machine 5 years. You got all these dudes playing so goddamn well. They were fantastic. And this crowd was fantastic. The place was absolutely heaving. Just a great day. Just a great, great day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's start with Korosau. He was magnificent.
And I cannot imagine what I'd be doing if I had gastro. And it wouldn't be being the best player on the field in an NRL game.
Maybe that's all that's stopping you.
Maybe.
Yeah, so like, I didn't know because like I wasn't checking my phone or anything during the game because I was too busy living life. But I didn't know how crook he was, apart from seeing when he threw up on the field. But you see guys do that sometimes. I didn't know how crook he was until at the pub after they had a replay of the press conference, and he looked like he was about to die. Like he was in absolutely shock and nick, and he was. But was just terrific. Like doing all that great stuff that he does around the ruck so well. Really leading by example as well. There was in the lead up to the Justin Ollam try, there was that loose ball on the ground and him and Hines were both going for it. And Korosau just threw himself at it and got the ball. And oh man, I really can't tell you. I know we've said it on the show before, but it bears repeating. The respect that I have gained for Appy Korosau over these last 18 months is something else. Cause like he was already a great player. You know, you don't win three premierships at two different clubs if you're not a great, great footballer. Right. And he transformed that. He helped transform that Penrith team into what they became and all of that. And we all knew how good he was. But It's one thing to be great on a team like that. It's another thing to go to the worst team in the goddamn league, a place where plenty of other players have gone and just collected a paycheck, and to play as well, if not better, you know, and to keep scheming and keep going and trying every trick in the bloody book for a team that was busted and couldn't beat anyone. You know, I thought he was the best hooker in the league last year on an absolutely rotten side. And doing like that, turning up every week and playing like that in a team that frankly didn't deserve that sort of skill or that sort of effort from a player, like, just wow. So my respect for him has grown enormously since he went to West. And it was great to see him have a game like this and get that recognition again and really be part of what was a really special night.
Not to mention, he re-signed with them in the middle of last year. Like, he had a choice to stick with the West Tigers last year. And despite the situation they were in, he backed himself and he backed that club and he backed the new regime and the things they said to him about the future. He backed all of that to the hilt and was committed to staying there for probably the remainder of his career. And I think maybe Saturday night was the start of that transformation project finally bearing a bit of fruit.
Yeah, talk about a transformation project. You mentioned Justin Olm. I think we were both a little bit skeptical of him going to West because...
Mainly because we love Sean Bloor so much.
Well, that, but like, we love Justin Olam as well. Like, we love a Kummel. Who doesn't love a Kummel, you know? But like, just down the stretch last year, he just didn't look like the same player. And I think it was fair to ask if he was going to be that same player. But then this is the best game that he's played in a good couple of seasons, both in attack and defense. Like, he was throwing himself around like it was 2020 again. You know, he sort of found a little bit of that old hunger that he had when he was coming up at the Storm. So if the Tigers have got this Justin Olam, then that really solidifies that edge for them, which has been a real problem for them the week before. So I was really impressed with him. I thought Stefano Utoikamanu and Fanua Pole were both just terrifying, just mighty, just like absolutely smacking blokes, you know? And like, as good as Coruscant is, there are limits to what he can do if his forwards aren't going forward. But Utoikamanu and Pole just like set the tone right from the jump. And Utoikamanu's developed this really good habit of when he comes on for his second stint, he's just been playing super angry and super physical and super direct. So I thought this was his one of his best first games.
86 post-contact minutes.
Yeah, that's the good stuff. Samuel Afainu, he helped out off the bench as well. I don't know what he's going to end up being, but he's the size of a house and really aggressive, great footwork. Guys like that usually do really well. But let's finish with the halves. We'll be talking about the Tigers. Aiden Caesar was great with his kicking game, really got him around the park really well. He's one of those blokes, when you see his kicking game in person, you understand the difference between
we are the preeminent Aiden Caesar podcast.
100%.
No podcast loves Aiden Caesar more than we do.
But you see the way he kicks in person, just the way he strikes the ball, not necessarily even the quality of the kicks, but the timing he has with his strike of the ball. And that's the difference between an all right kicker and a guy who can really, really kick. I thought he made such a big difference for them.
One thing that always strikes me across sports in general, not just rugby league, is when a young guy comes into a team and, you know, they might have a year, even 2 years, and they just flatter to deceive, right? You never see it. You never see a spark. You never see them show anything that makes you think, oh, that guy's going to be a star. But because they're young.
From Aiden Caesar, from the jump.
Correct. But you'll always have guys defending them, being like, oh, just wait, he's young, or blah, blah, blah. I've always been in the opinion that, like, I would say 90% of the time I can make a snap judgment on a guy after like two games, knowing if he's going to be a star or not. And it just comes down to whether you show that you have star quality. And Lachlan Galvin has shown that through two games. He's shown more to me in two games than some other young halves in this league have shown me in 2 years. When I made this point on the radio yesterday, the host jumped in at this point and said, just say Lachlan Ilias, mate. I know you want to. But I didn't. They were his words. They were his words, not mine.
Who was that?
I was Jules from SEN. But they were his words, not mine. But Lachlan Galvin is showing me that he is someone that is going to be a big part of this future for the West Tigers. And they've got Fainu coming. They've got Fainu waiting in the wings as well. So suddenly it's gone from, you know, who's going to partner Jerome Luai to now there's going to be a genuine conversation about what they're going to do next year with
maybe,
the amount
maybe,
of options
maybe
they
Luai
have.
Starts out with the Magpies.
Man, I think he might have to.
Maybe he's got to earn his place in this.
I mean,
team.
I'm just look. Could we be the first on this take?
You've never minded a bit of anti-Luai stuff.
He's all right. He's a good player, but like, I mean, he's not had a great start to the season.
He's no Lockie Life's Good Galvin.
I'm just saying, like,
he's no Lockie Long Game Galvin. We couldn't figure out which nickname we liked more, so we were alternating between calling him Long Game and just yelling out
Life's Good.
Which was great because we saw like six Sharks fans wearing the old jerseys where they were sponsored by
Lockie Galvin owns your club. Cop that.
No, we just kept calling him Dykesy. Like we all pretend they were all Adam Dykes.
Yep, that's fair. That makes sense.
No, Dykesy, don't do it.
I did love on the hill. There was a guy about 10 meters away from us wearing a Socceroos jersey. And on the back, the nameplate said Days Sober. And then the number was zero. And with 20 to go, he just took it off and started posing for photos with people, just holding it up. When the Tigers are winning big at Leichhardt, there's very few places on earth that it's better to be because people just go hog wild. People lose their goddamn minds. Anything, it's mountain rules when you're on the hill at Leichhardt Oval and the Tigers are winning. Like, you can do whatever you want, and I'm there for it.
100%. Like, before we get into like the Leichhardt experience and all that, let's spend a little bit more time on Long Game Galvin. I'm with you. I can't believe how comfortable he looks. You know, I can't believe how confident he is, how well he's slotted in with that attack. Coruscant was talking about this after the game, and he said, like, when young blokes come in, you have to give them the confidence to feel like they're a part of the attack, not that they're sort of a junior partner in it, but like a full equitable thing. And that's what Galvin's doing. You know, he's combining so well with Caesar and with Coruscant. Physically, he's right up to this. I don't think he's missed a tackle yet in two games in first grade. He's a bigger, more physical dude than you think. And yeah, I'm super, super impressed. He looks so much more composed than a fella that age has any right to be. And he got interviewed on the field after this game. I think it was the first time a lot of people have seen him get interviewed. And I had a lot of people I saw were saying, wow, he really is just a kid, isn't he? And he is, but he doesn't play like one. I'm very, very impressed with what he's been showing so far.
Shout out Eagle Vale St. Andrews. What a club.
ESA, I love that. ESA, baby.
That's the best part. It's always better when the talented kid you got going through is a local junior. It's always
better. Absolutely.
Did you hear what Shane Richardson said about him?
Didn't he say he could be the next John Sutton?
Yeah, I loved it. Richo's on board with our thing of comparing
targeted,
guys.
That's targeted marketing for you.
Yeah.
I preferred when Benji said he was like Scott Hill. The Sutton one was
for me. I mean, I loved it. I loved it. And I think that this guy could be anything. Like, honestly, he was fantastic on Saturday. The whole team was. We haven't talked about the Sharks at all. Do you want to?
Well, do you?
Well, the best part is, right, like, we've morphed into, like, adopting other teams as our own to the point where, I don't know if you remember this because you were lost in the moment, but there was a point where the Tigers scored a try. And you were probably a good 5 to 10 meters away from me on the hill. And I looked across at you and you looked across at me. You flipped me off with both hands and went back to watching the game in a contest between two teams that we do not support. But in that moment, it was your West Tigers beating my Cronulla Sharks. And you're flipping me off like Josh Papali had just run through Damien Cook to score. It was fantastic.
We locked eyes and all of a sudden nothing else mattered.
I'm just going to flip this guy off in this spot this time. And yeah, I probably deserved it.
Oh, God.
Tell you what, those Sharks fans that were brave enough to slog it out on Piss Mountain, I mean, congratulations to them.
Piss Mountain was on one all night. But like, let's talk about it with the Shark. I felt like in that first 20 minutes, whenever they played with a lot of tempo, whenever they really just cranked up the speed and threw the ball around, they looked really good. And that's how they ended up getting that first try with Hazelton. They just got some ruck speed and the Tigers really couldn't recover, but felt like the longer the ball was in play, the more the game was sort of in a set for set battle, a set for set grind. It inevitably bent towards the Tigers, and part of that is because the Sharks had a lot of injuries.
Also dropped the ball 73 times.
Well, that didn't help. But like poor old Royce Hunt getting injured on the bench while he's staying warm. I've never heard of that happening before. But like, Finucane got knocked out. Rudolph got hurt as well. And this Tigers team does have a lot of strength and power in the forwards. And in hindsight, they're a pretty. If the Sharks can't get their attack going, all of a sudden it becomes a pretty favorable matchup for the Tigers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that you mentioned Finucane there. I think he's a guy that maybe could have hung him up a year or two ago.
It's just and, a lot of miles.
Just
on
a
that
long
load
career,
there.
Like a long hard, career doing hard a miles hard. Too. Yeah, the Roy Sutton thing is objectively quite funny when you factor in that they're playing the Raiders next week, and I've already had Raiders fans make the joke that he did it on purpose to avoid playing Corey Horsbrough.
Royce Hunt's afraid of the Raiders. Latrell Mitchell's afraid of the Raiders. I'm a little bit afraid of the Raiders. Look what they do to me, you know.
And I'm afraid of the truth. The truth is we're lost. Yeah, and I guess the knock is that the Sharks can't beat top eight teams, which the West Tigers currently are. So, you know, maybe that's part of it too.
Mm.
So, I think I've suffered the worst bad beat in front row Friday history, by the way, because Toby Rudolph goes off for HIA, who I picked. Tom Hazelton, who comes on in his place, scores the try. Who did I pick last week?
Tom Hazelton, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like I've been not robbed, but like I feel like that's pretty unlucky set of circumstances. But oh, it's still nil all. We're up against it, mate. We're struggling.
If you guys get the chance, go on the Insta and check out the Front Row Friday video we did last week. It was very funny.
Yeah, thank
Invoking
you.
Invoking the spirit of Mark Tukey, RIP.
RIP. Yeah, no, it's funny though, because I think we're both now looking at each other like it's almost like a quick draw thing where who's going to be the first one cowardly enough to pick Adam Fanua Blake? Because you might win, but you'll lose respect if you do it. So neither of us want it.
I've wanted it. I want it every week.
You wanted it last when you just before you picked Tamalolo, you were like, oh, I should pick Adam Fanua Blake. And sure enough, he scores. But also, it would have been against your own team. So you can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but it's now almost like a who's going to blink first and pick him? I won't be because I'm an honorable man. But God.
I might.
You might. Yeah, Nico Hines, a really tough night for him as well. But yeah, again, when your forwards are getting bashed like that.
They all have them sometimes.
He's still got six Dalian points, right?
Well, yeah. Well, you know,
I did enjoy Jack tweeting a fake screenshot of the Dalian points.
A lot of people who should have known.
Friend of the show, Harry Ramage, jumped right in the boat. Come on, H.
Yeah, but like, part of the reason Hines had a tough one is because John Bateman was on his hammer all night in that attack dog way that we know he can do, you know.
And, yeah, last week I thought Bateman was pushed too far over the envelope. I thought this week he
got it
down
right.
The line and really towed it.
100%. Let's talk a little bit about the Leichhardt Oval experience because it's become a bit of a talking point because there was that story a few weeks ago that by the end of next season, we might not have any more NRL games. And then Shane Richardson gave an interview on James Graham's podcast where he wouldn't guarantee the club's future there. And I have to say, if the West Tigers walk away from what they've got at Leichhardt, that would be a footballing tragedy because it's when they're there and when they win and when they have nights like this, it is special in a way that nothing else in rugby league really is. And like I've been to games all over the country. I've been to rugby league games all over the world. And what they have at Leichhardt is unique. That relationship between the club and the ground and the fans, there is really, really nothing like it, you know? And yeah, it can be hard to see. Yeah, you can. I missed most of the first half because I was lining up to get a beer. So I only saw sort of glimpses over the top of people who were on the big screen. But you know what? That didn't matter in the slightest. I had an unbelievable time on Friday night. On Saturday night, I felt connected to my community, to the community I live in. More so than I ever do in any other walk of life. You know, like I don't go for the Tigers, right? But the Tigers have been my local team nearly my entire life. Like growing up, they were my local team out in Camden. And where I live now, they're my local team too. And I think sometimes we can forget that we think of rugby league clubs as franchises or whatever, but they're clubs, right? They're a community organization. And that comes through at places like Leichhardt or Shark Park or Brookvale or Cogra or even Penrith Stadium, you know? And Richardson sort of said in his interview with James Graham that they only sold 30 corporate suites maybe 30 corporate suites at Leichhardt and they could have sold 70 at Bankwest. And it's like, mate, I do not care. Rugby league is not meant to be for the suits. Rugby league is for the people and the people love this goddamn ground, you know? And like, there are a lot of people who complain about it and say, oh, it takes too long to line up and it's a shitty thing to get to. It's like, all right, well, if that's how you feel, don't come because they don't need you there, man. They have so many people who love this ground. There was nearly 17,000 people there. It was the biggest crowd at Leichhardt since before the pandemic.
Wow.
You know, people love this place. This place is special for this club and for those fans and for that community. And If they ever got rid of it, my relationship with rugby league would change forever, because my relationship with rugby league and with the people around me is really, really enriched by being able to have that experience a couple of times a year. I love that ground so much.
So I knew we were going to talk about this, so I pulled up the stats on Rugby League Project a little bit earlier, and I just looked at the venues that they've called home in their short history as the West Tigers, as the joint venture, right? So they've played 91 matches at Homebush, 136, lost 54, drawn 1. 96 at Campbelltown, 137, lost 53, drawn 6 somehow. That's a lot of draws. But then at Leichhardt, played 98. So same number of games at all three, 152. So they have a much better record at Leichhardt than the other grounds that they've called home. And we talk about home ground advantage. There's very few home ground advantages like Leichhardt. Well, the Hill is a rowdy, rowdy place to be. It is a nightmare place if you are on the opposition team and you are playing poorly or the Tigers are on top of you. It's a ground that the players clearly feed off the energy coming from that hill and from the surrounds, more so than you can get at really any other ground. You can never really prove this stuff because but people know that home ground advantage exists, right? And I feel like Leichhardt Oval gives the Tigers a better chance to win than playing anywhere else. And the stats reflect that with the number of wins they have there compared to those other venues. And so you think that people have come at this from a business standpoint, right? Oh, we're not selling enough corporate suites, or we can't sell enough grandstand tickets because the grandstand's not very big and the hills takes up the majority of the ground and all that stuff. But you know what's more important to a football club than the business? Winning football games. And being at Leichhardt Oval, whatever you feel about Leichhardt Oval as a place, the amenities, the location, all that stuff, if my club has the option of playing at three places and they win far more often at one of them than they do at the others, why on earth would I, as the boss of that club, want to stop playing there?
Yeah, I don't want to like get too conceptual or like philistinal here, but in the modern world, right? People crave authentic experiences. You know, so much of what our world is now is artificial and lived through screens, and it's not person to person anymore. And in Leichhardt Oval, the Tigers have an authentic, unique experience that the fans love, that the players love, that like literally everyone loves. The people that don't love it don't go there, right? It's not for them. It's for the people that are going to want to be there and are going to want to show up, you know? The future of the Tigers is in Campbelltown, right? Everybody knows that. The MacArthur area is one of the fastest growing areas in the entire country. That's where all their players are going to come from. That's where Lockie, LG, Life's Good, Galvin, that's where he came from. It's where Talon De Silva came from. That's the future. But the past is important too. And the past and the present and the future can all meet at this old rickety shit ground where magic happens, man. And if they give that up, they are crazy. They are crazy. Giving that up so you can sell a couple of suites to some goddamn suits. Are you kidding me? Man, this is the people's game. The West Tigers are the people's club. You know, don't walk away from that. You should embrace that. You should embrace that. Embrace this special thing that you have that no one else does. Even the other suburban grounds, like they have their own thing going on. But what the Tigers have with Leichhardt is just for them. Like how what the Sharks have at Shark Park is just for them. And if you give that up, you're insane.
Yeah, like I hate going to Brookvale Oval, but I would never deign to take it away from Manly fans who love being there.
There's probably a Northern Beaches based podcast with a guy with a red moustache and you know some sort of equivalent for me as well. And they talk about how good Lotto Land is all the time, you know.
Yeah,
but like this is a rugby league club is a community organization. Leichhardt Oval is a community place, man. It's for the people.
Speaking as someone who's had to trot out to the soulless monolith that is Homebush Stadium for my team's home games since 2006 now. I think 5 or 6 when South was out. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So almost 20 years now. I only get that like experience a couple of times a year, like you do when we go there, but it's just so different to what I get on a weekly basis going to South's games.
Yeah.
It's just completely different. Like I love going to games with my grandfather and my family, don't get me wrong. It would be so much better if we had a hill and it was loud and it was rocking, if we were allowed to play games at Redfern Oval or something like that. Instead, we get the same number of people that would be at Leichhardt with 1/10 of the energy. Yeah. And that's what I've been dealing with for 15 years. And it's just it makes the contest flatter. It makes the event flatter. It doesn't make you feel like every time we go to Leichhardt, right? It's an event. It feels like something is happening in the air. You go to one of the pubs around the area beforehand, you walk down Norton Street, or you walk up from the Orange Grove, wherever you come from. This massive humanity is descending upon this, as you said, rickety shit old ground that's hard to get to and all that stuff. But it feels like something's happening. It feels like the community is coming together for that night, for the West Tigers. And the energy that they create is something that you just cannot get at other grounds, particularly grounds like Homebush, where I've been going every week for 20 odd years now. You can never get that. You can get a 17,000 people descending upon ANZ is what? It's a few train loads of people filtering in 10 minutes before kickoff, because the Homebush Bay precinct is not exactly the thriving night spot that that Norton Street is, or that the Orange Grove Hotel is. And it's a real shame that fans like mine and fans like the Bulldogs for a long time, they get the occasional Belmore game now, but for a long time they played all their games at Homebush as well. It's a real shame for fans like us that we don't get to experience this. But as I get to live vicariously through the Tigers fans a couple of times a year, at both Leichhardt and Campbelltown, but especially at Leichhardt, I would never want to take that away from them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's insane that there's people that can't realise that this game is not, as you said, for a few suits to stand in a corporate box and not even watch the game. It's for us to stand on the hill and scream, LG, life's good. That's what it's about, you know?
Lucky, long game, Galvin.
Yeah. The Sharks were bad.
Yeah, they were. They were, and it could get worse for them as well, because they got Canberra next. They got Canberra this weekend,
you
which
go?
Is which. Maybe not. I might have to work. Canberra. So that's a bad stylistic matchup for them. They're already a bit skinny in the forwards. If they're missing some of their main guys for a couple of weeks, they're going to have to try and overcome that. But I'm expecting them to at least try and bounce back well. I'm expecting them to sort of be a little shamed into a little bit of valor after a performance like that, where they just were so below their best.
I briefly flirted with going to a game a day all 5 days this week. I thought about it.
Oh, really? There were a lot of people who did the Belmore Leichhardt double.
Yeah, we could have done it. But
friend of the show, Neil Desmond, he did it. There was a surprising amount of people in Dogs jerseys and Dogs paraphernalia.
Yeah.
At the Tigers game, there was even a couple of Titans fans. I saw like three or four Titans fans who, after watching their team get absolutely smacked, they were like, you know what? I'm saddling up. I want more footy. So good on them. Good on them.
Yeah. And people are blowing about the ticket prices, but I got asked about that on the radio yesterday as well. Oh, $55. I was like, mate, just buy it online. It was $40, which is still too expensive, but also. Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I won't defend. Like,
no.
Because this is a community thing, it has to be accessible. So the tickets have got to be. They've got to help us out there, man.
Just put in another couple of beer kiosks. Not that.
Well, this particular game, they didn't have as many bars open as they
this was a nightmare. I got in the line when they were still serving four beers, but by the time I got to the front, they were like, "Oh, we can only serve you two beers."
Yeah, that happened to me as well. But like, that's poor logistics. When you have less bars, the lines are going to be longer. So just why not have the regular amount of bars that you always? I don't know.
Anyway, but if that's our biggest complaint, whatever. Great night.
Dude, I don't go to the footy to drink, do I? I go to the footy to feel things. You know, I can drink at the pub before and after. That's
and to have
I mean.
About a refreshing can of VB on the hill at Leichhardt. Who's going to say
no? It enhances the experience, no doubt. It
sure does. I agree with that. Yeah, great night, great time, a great game of rugby league football on Sunday afternoon. As the Parramatta Eels 28, Manly Seagulls 24, the first 14-0 dickhead of the season. And happening to Manly, which is poetic because they are, of course, the pioneers of the 14-0 dickhead.
A tasteful tribute to their past.
Yeah. People don't know. Go back and we'll tell it another time because we're already running late. But Manly looked unbelievable in the first 15-odd minutes of this game. They were exploiting that Morgan Harper plays Talangi edge to no end. That try where they just spread it early and Ruben Gag burned them on the outside was absolutely beautiful. I thought he had a blinder, but then Parramatta worked out to run at Luke Brooks, and that kind of even the scales a little bit.
Well, that and bring in on Junior Barlow and Ryan.
That does
Madison.
Help.
That really
that does help.
Barlow was magnificent.
That offload for the Moses try.
Oh my God, it's wheeling and dealing, the world's biggest halfback, just amazing stuff. But like. He totally flipped the script of the game with his physicality, with his intent, and with his skill as well. Because from the moment he came on, it felt like Parramatta were offloading in every single tackle. It says he had four and Hopgood had three. I don't believe those numbers. I think Paulo had 10 and Hopgood had 12.
Are you saying they are fake news?
Well, it felt like every carry they were able to get something going, and it just sort of brought an up-tempo nature to this game that Manly just couldn't really hang with, you know. And by the time the Manly starters came back on, particularly Paseka, who I think has fast become their most important middle forward in yardage, they just couldn't get it back. They just couldn't get it back. And in that last 15, when they were searching for a winner, they just looked exhausted because Parramatta had just totally run them ragged, you know. Like, it was a really impressive performance of resilience from Parramatta, because the way Manly attack, it's so expansive and all that, that it'd be an easy thing to get discouraged about, an easy thing to sort of drop your head a little bit. But Parramatta stayed on the job and did really, really well to fight their way back into it.
The only thing that was really keeping Manly in this when it got into a bit of an arm wrestle was, I think, Daly Cherubin's boot, because they were getting out-metered in those when it was sort of grinding set for set. They were getting outgained by a good 15, 20 metres every set. Their forwards could not get anything going whatsoever. And it was only a couple of big clearing kicks from DCE that really turned Gutherson around a couple of times and really kept them in it field position-wise. It's just strange to me that, again, like a team just went away from what worked. Like, just getting out early at a very poor defensive edge of Morgan Harper and Blaise Talangi. Debutant try for Talangi, great to see. But they had so much success going that way early on, and then they just kind of stopped doing it. It was very strange.
Yeah, they did kind of go off the job a little bit. I honestly think that's a fatigue thing. I think Parramatta put so much pressure on them with their own attack, and Manly were scrambling so hard in defence a lot of the time, that when Manly did have the ball, it was like when you're under fatigue, you don't make your normal decisions, you know. And I think they just weren't able to put themselves in a position to sort of execute those shifts as well as they were in the opening exchanges. So I actually think that's more of a byproduct of Parramatta's attack than anything else.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because it's hard to make decisions. It's hard to make good choices when you're tired, you know.
Yeah, I do love the double revenge game for Morgan Harper and Kelma Tuolungi. The guys who score the two, basically the
that's
tries.
That's right.
The side
oh,
of the
I
game.
Forgot. Yeah. I love a double revenge game. Yeah. I thought Moses and Brown were both excellent for the Eels. They combined so well. They've always had a nice sort of rhythm to the way they attack with one another, but in this game they just got it.
That pass
100%
Brown through for the Harper try.
Unreal. Ridiculous. And what was cool is he sort of looked for it a couple of times before.
He threw one into the seats in the first half.
Yeah, but then there was another one where I thought Harper just wasn't going hard.
Yeah, it went to ground, they turned around and jumped on it.
Yeah. But then that one he threw was just perfect. Brown's running game was really, really strong. Moses was just making all the right choices. I really loved him and Brooks going head to head, because they're great mates as well. And it's always really good when you see two blokes who clearly have a really personal relationship go at each other like that, you know. And when Moses put Taulungi over and he got up and he was giving it to Brooks, and I think Brooks, he might not have run past him for a line break in the first half, but he definitely put one on him a little bit. So that was, I loved seeing that, loved that sort of personal duel. The Blaise Taulungi try was awesome.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wasn't it just
Saint Blaise.
Saint Blaise, patron saint of trucking dudes. Oh, get out of my way. You don't see Tommy get trucked like that
very
often.
You really don't. You really don't. And that's the kind of thing where, like, Blaise Taulungi might have a massive future in first grade, but you know, he might not as well. But something like that, running over the top of Tom Trbojevic, Dally M winner, Blues legend, Manly hero. Like, that, he'll remember that the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Just amazing. So cool.
There was a moment in this game that I didn't think it was controversial. I thought it was a very by the numbers obstruction, but it's completely dominant, which is a goddamn shame because this game was fantastic. But why has that dominated the media coverage since yesterday afternoon? Because just lazy from Tom Trbojevic.
Well, personally, I thought the pass from
Trbojevic, the pass was also probably forward, but
See, this is what I spoke about this last week on the questions show, where someone was asking about refereeing, and they said, "Do you want sort of black and white rules, or do you want common sense?" And I was like, well, you can't win either way, because stopping in the line like that is a black and white rule. That's an obstruction penalty. It has been for a really long time now. It doesn't matter if Luca Moretti was going to be able to get there. He was denied the opportunity to get there. And that's the point. And even if Moretti put a little bit of salt on it, Jake Trbojevic stopped in the line. He's an experienced enough player to know, and a smart enough player to know, that you can't do that. If you do that, and that in any way contributes to a gap being there, then it's an obstruction. It really is that simple. It really is that open and shut, you know. And if you start to bring common sense into it, well, the thing is, everyone's got a different definition of common sense. Everyone's got a different definition of what constitutes enough of an obstruction to cause an obstruction than what doesn't. So this is the only way, you know. And Trbojevic should have known better. He's a smarter player than this. He's a smarter player than this. He should, and he's usually much better with his effort like that. He should have known that you got to push through, you know.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I didn't quite get what all the fuss was about.
But the thing is, like I was watching on KO, like at halftime, Greg Alexander said basically what you just said. And so, like, how did this continue on at that point? Because usually it's the, you know, it's the people on the broadcast that make these narratives, right? And just concerning an amount of people form their opinions based off what they're told by the television. But even the man on the television said it was a clear penalty. So I don't really
understand. The other men on the television.
Ah, they didn't
there
say
there
it
is
that
there
way.
Is more than one man on the television, but
dueling televisions.
Look, if I was Manly, I'm not worried about this. It's just like, it's a bit like Canberra, where they're adjusting to a sort of new style of play. And the only way you get better at that style is when it gets really, really battle tested. And they'll probably be better for this loss. You know, they'll know how to operate their game under pressure better the next time it happens as a result of what happened in this match. But yeah, just a really fun game, a really fun game of Sunday footy. Awesome stuff.
Yep, loved it. And finally, the Newcastle Knights 14, the Melbourne Storm 12.
Not as fun this game.
But I will say, when I got a call from Harry Ramage at 3:30 yesterday afternoon saying, my mate did up Jack Cogger's house and Cogger's given us free tickets to say thank you, I promptly changed my tip from Storm to Knights.
You got up me for changing my tip and the integrity of the graphic.
Who did I change it to? Just Harry on the phone. No one else knows about it. But, man, I'm happy for him. Obviously, you know, living in Sydney, it's hard for him to get up to Knights games all the time. And I love him to death. I want him to be happy. And it's just great that he was able to be up there. And the Knights fans in general were able to just see them knock off the Storm at home for the second year running.
Yeah, yeah. I said in the lead-up, I thought it was going to be hard for the Storm to get up for this game because their first two matches of the season, not only did they expend a lot of effort in winning both of them, the 8-0 win over Penrith and then the comeback against the Warriors, but I think they expended a lot of emotional energy as well. And with Jerome Hughes already out, with Jerome Hughes out, Cameron Munster already out, it just seemed to be a bridge too far. And I thought they were still high on their effort. I thought Pappenhausen was buzzing around the ruck, really trying to get something going. But without Hughes's composure, you know, they were relying a lot on Jonah Pezza to steer him around. I really rate him, but he's still just a young man. I think this is only about his 10th first grade game or so. So, and then they lose Remus Smith to injury as well. All of a sudden it becomes pretty bare bones. And while I didn't think the Knights were sparkling or anything like that, but they played with a lot of effort. And I thought Kalen Ponga in particular, friend of the show, Kalen Ponga, by the way, we forgot to mention that last week.
Yeah, he's a big fan of my video work. So good on him.
Yeah, we clipped up the part of the show last
Ponga
week
looking dangerous.
About Ponga looking dangerous. And what did he comment on it? He said,
I think he said, even I think that's hilarious.
Yeah,
good on you for laughing at yourself, Kalen.
Yeah, good for him. But yeah, like this was like, apart from that great pass he threw to Inari Tuala, which was sick. Like it wasn't like there was heaps of attack that he could get going. They weren't really running a lot of shape for him, but he was just so busy on the ball. Like he was just getting involved as much as he could. He finished with 156 meters, 10 tackle busts, but no line breaks. So it was a lot of grunt work around the middle of the field, just trying to get something going. So it wasn't like a sparkling performance, but it was full of effort. It was full of effort. And he's always had a lot more ticker than people give him credit for. And games like this show why. You know, he might look like a bit of a fancy boy, but he's the true steel, man. He's super tough. And I thought he really, really led from the front for the Knights.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And this was just, I think, I thought it was very, they saw the game out well after that Tyron Wishart try. They didn't really give the Storm one more chance like the Warriors did last week. I think they kind of like, I loved, people were talking about this. I loved the anger that Ponga showed on that Wishart try. They showed that
Me
replay
too.
Of him punching the ground.
I loved
but, mate,
I loved the intensity.
if you've got to love that, you got to love when your players care. Also, one of my favorite moments in this game, peak guy knowing the rules, was Tom Jenkins catching that ball with his foot over the sideline, and he did a little fist bump, and everyone came over and congratulated him. It was like, fuck yeah, good work, Tom. You knew the rules. Good job, buddy.
Love it when a guy makes a play that where the commentators can say, well, he's read the rule book.
Well, he's read the rule book. Is the book out in the Melbourne Storm? Are they frauds, Nick? No, I'm kidding. But they weren't great.
Oh yeah, but they'll be fine. They're missing, like, they're probably going to be missing Munster for a lot longer, so we can't say he'll come in and save things. But like, no, Hughes made it really, really difficult for them. You know,
tough and night for Tyron Wishart until that try.
Yeah, but I'm giving him a pass back. He's not a halfback. He's a dummy half who the Storm sort of trust in a lot of different.
Great positions. Try, by the way.
Great try, bro.
Where was Brayley going?
Mate, I'll tell you where he was going. Wherever Tyron Wishart was telling him to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Storm will be fine. Don't know about Trent Loiero as a passer in the middle of the field. Carries the ball well, no doubt. But I think he'd probably better off at prop rather than lock, because asking him to sort of play that point forward role, I think, was a bit beyond him. I want to wrap Jacob Safidi. I thought he was great in the middle of the field for the Knights. And I think Kai Pierce-Paul is improving every single week. I think by the end of the season, he's going to be an absolute wrecking machine. And I want to wrap Tyson Frizzell as well, who I thought played with a lot of physicality and a lot of effort. There was he had a great chase down on someone in the first half, I can't remember, and then Melbourne went to spread it and then tried to cut back in behind the ruck, and he made a great second effort to not just tackle someone but really hit him as well. I think he's really been leading by example, even though the team hasn't been playing great these last couple of weeks.
I think the Knights are still figuring some stuff out with the halves as well. Like, yeah, I don't think Hoggo was particularly good either. Gamble had another tough game, so maybe they look to maybe go Cogger and Hastings next. Try all the different combinations. I don't know what they do, but
maybe Ponga should play 5-8 again. Maybe the third time it'll work.
That's what they say. Third time's a charm. So
Cogger didn't have his happiest game, but I think what's more important is the Knights showing enough sort of effort to win this game after the first two first two rounds. I think that was really important just for their own confidence.
A badly needed win for them.
One more thing before we move on. And we forgot to mention this on the Monday show as well, because we're idiots. You might not have seen this. Xavier Coates gave an interview after the Warriors game, after the great try that he scored. And they all said to him, how did you prepare for it? What did you do? And he said, well, me and my brother had a tradition growing up where we would watch highlights of this certain player who was really well known for corner finishes. And he goes, and I still do it now. And they go, who was the player? Who was the player? And guess who it was?
Who was it?
Kalifa Faifailoa.
Unbelievable.
Who, the day before the game, was chosen for what about this guy?
I think we can put this one on the resume.
I think we can too. And then last week, we had Martin Afire as our what about this guy. George Clark, not happy about that, by the way. I tried to explain to him the exchange rate between
he
being
did
a guy
get,
and
it was the first thing he said to me when I saw him on Saturday.
Wasn't happy about it. Didn't care, but still. Martin Afire, Wigan legend, all the Wigan guys in the NRL, Kai Pierce-Paul, John Bateman, Morgan Smithies, they all had good games on the weekend. So what does that
tell
you?
We're doing it. We're the tastemakers.
Well, mate, Dean Robb's up this weekend, but the Roosters play on Thursday, so it might have to be a retroactive.
He'll get you the name beforehand. Guy. He'll probably get you the name before that, though.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. What do we use these powers to fight crime or for evil?
Good, I think. We're good guys. Mostly.
We'll see how we go.
We're not evil.
We're not villains.
No, we're not. All right. Thursday night, you just mentioned it. Roosters, Panthers. Suddenly, a thrilling contest coming.
Fascinating
up.
One, yeah.
Sam Walker's been cleared from his concussion thing, so he can play.
Walker's been cleared. They're talking about Keary being good to go as well.
Shannon Smith is pretty good.
The Panthers are going to be without Scott Sorensen.
Fisher Harris back or still gone?
Knee injury. Ivan Cleary said after the game that Fisher Harris has gone back to New Zealand for a personal matter.
Oh, okay.
So I'm guessing he's going to be out too, which all of a sudden really throws this one up.
I thought you were pausing to do the Coltrane drop for a second. I was like, Nick Campton, you lunatic. The Roosters at $2.60 at home does feel very generous given how they played on Friday night. But
Yeah, it is an intriguing one. I know I am guilty, like many other people, where every time the Roosters play well, I think, well, that's it. They've got it. They've got it.
yeah.
They've worked it out. The Roosters that we all were so terrified would one day arrive are now here, and they're just going to steam through and make the grand final. So I'm always wary that I know I've got that in me, but I do think the signs against South were really good. And even though they were poor against Manly the week before, I think the fact that some of their key players like Tedesco and Radley and Brandon Smith are all playing well, they're all doing things that they'll be able to replicate every week. I don't know. I give them a big shot in this one, particularly with the guys who are out for Penrith. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I'm going to tip them. I just think with no Fisher Harris and no Sorensen, the Roosters are going to have a substantial advantage in the forward pack, I think. And if the guys like Radley's played incredible so far this year, but he was wonderful again on Friday night. We didn't really talk about him. There was too many nice things to say, but there was too many bad things to say about South. But yeah, I think that's a strength of theirs. They're one of the few teams that can match the Panthers athletically in the outside backs, and Sam Walker's playing. If Sam Walker wasn't playing and they were rolling out Sandon Smith, and who would even be there? Would they move Joey Manu there? Like, who would it be?
I think it'd be Connor Watson.
Oh yeah, okay, all right. But instead, they're going to keep the guys that played really well on Friday night. And I think they're good value to win this one. I think with the way Tedesco's playing as well, I think that there's opportunities there. I think Parramatta had a lot of success against Penrith scoring points. I think up until when Bailey Simonson went off the field, they were every chance of winning that one. So I think barring for the third week in a row, someone
Barring
getting,
some unforeseen incident.
yeah, for the third straight week where Penrith get like a key guy taken off the field for the other team. I think barring that, I think the Roosters are a very good chance of winning this game. So I'm going to tip them.
Yeah, you know what? I will too.
There you go.
I will too.
All right. I don't have any news. Do you?
Well, I think we kind of hit on most of the news
Yeah, we talk about Tino and
during the
stuff
game
during the.
reviews. So I think we're pretty good.
If we have to do an emergency pod because they've sacked Demetriou in like 2 hours, I'm going to be very annoyed.
Well, it's been a couple of weeks since we had news break in the hours after recording. So would you for one for sure?
Yeah. All right. Before we get out of here, I'd like to give a quick thank you to the people in the top two tiers of our Patreon service. Go to patreon.com/boomrookies. You get access to our Discord server, merch discounts, a third show every single week, and plenty more. So thank you to a perverted female listener. Sup, Chris Abnell, Dave, Michael. In round four, 2000, the Bulldogs beat the Rabbitohs 32-6 at Aussie Stadium with Nigel Vungenaar scoring 5 tries. Murray. Well, Michael, that's not possible because South weren't in the NRL in 2000. That game was in 2002. I was there. You're an
Yeah,
idiot.
cop that.
Stu, Waino worships Wilton when he whacks weak, woeful wingers. Adam Small, Broncos legend, Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pie-Eating Pom, Butsy, Chivakis Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David, digging coal with Danny Levi, and anonymous backer, Ed Burton. Fuck him. Good to see you commit to something. Future Johnny Warren medalist, Jed Drew, son of Brad. Future Man of Steel runner-up, Lachlan Ilias. Gordon Tallis versus Ben Roth. I can't speak. I can't speak. I can't afford this tier anymore. I hear your mum's going out with Squeak. I'm struggling to find adequate superlatives to describe this performance.
Yeah,
I
nice.
remember that one.
Yeah,
Jason,
nice.
Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, kicks us out of the comp. Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Spidmore, Mads Taylor's version, Matthew Duggan, Morgan Watkins. My name is Nick Campton, and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Nick Kotrick lives on my street, so literally coaching him to run it straight. Sami Army, Formac 78, push it up. Manly, Reece Brown, rested by Demetriou, Rodrigo Duarte, and the curse of the accidental head clash. Roxanne Clark, see you in Vegas. Shunter, the black vegetable, the campiest of campos. Thor, Tom Hardy, Woz, Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby, and Whiskey Tungo Foxtrot, duty to bend. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens. Thank you as well. All right.
Very nice.
Yeah. Push it up, Manly. Never, never doesn't make me laugh.
What does
Fuck, it's
it
fine.
mean?
No one knows what it
What are they
means.
pushing up?
The
Now that
footy
we're
support,
now
right? Maybe it was just about Brett Stewart being like a really good support player.
maybe now that the powers of a mid-tier rugby league podcast have been thrown behind Manly, maybe we can have the influence to either explain what's going on with that banner or maybe just have it destroyed entirely.
Maybe.
Maybe that can be
Yeah.
our lasting legacy as with Manly as the team of the show.
I think so. I hope so. God, what are we gonna do on Friday? If we lose, we're gonna lose. Jesus Christ.
Okay, if they lose, does the mo go?
I think people are really clamoring for this, so I'll say yes for the third consecutive week, and then just not do it. But yeah, I don't know. I like the moustache. Everyone likes the moustache, but
I
it's not gonna
know, I
do
know,
anything. Jinxes aren't real.
but
I can't be the jinxes aren't real guy and then cave to peer pressure on this. But it has been almost a calendar year since I've seen them win a game.
And the Dogs, like, if they look like, I know you hate the Roosters, but you hate the Dogs more.
I hate losing to the Bulldogs more because they're shit and we're not supposed to lose to them.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a lot.
I got some bad news for you, future Matt. Oh, God, Nick. Oh, God. Oh, well, that's Friday's problem. For now, I don't have any problems. Well, we've got to edit the show, publish it.
Is that a problem?
No, it's a joyous process just to relive the great things that we've discussed over the past 80 to 90 minutes, the moments we've shared together, the laughs we've had, the ways we've grown as people. You can keep singing that as I finish the outro. Say goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
And it's goodbye to me.